Now let's take a look at the present state of South Africa. South Africa has long since been touted as the most developed and most industrialized economy on the African continent, and we have had quite a bit of a head start on the rest of our continental peers. We're going to take a look at the current state of South Africa, in particular the South African infrastructure that we have in place, because there's been a couple of things around Transnet, around Eskom, and most recently around the National Health Insurance Bill, and that all points towards the need for infrastructure to keep these things afloat. And helping you with this discussion is senior lecturer at Stellenbosch Business School. She's also a developmental economist, Dr. Ntabiseng Moleko. Good evening, Dr. Moleko. Thanks so much for taking the time. I want to start by looking at the current state of South African infrastructure across the various fundamental areas, so across healthcare, across rail, and any other sort of essential sector within the economy.
All right. Thank you so much for that. And thanks for having me. I think the very important aspect I'd like to start out with is when we look at the status of infrastructure, and we'll look at it across shipping, across rail, road, ports. We could look at healthcare. So there's two different tiers here. There's social infrastructure, mainly focused on human capital in education or in healthcare, which is crucial for human development. And then there's the aspect of what we call economic infrastructure, where facilities are provided that are necessary to raise our productivity, whether you're looking at industrialization, whether you're looking at sectoral development, and any other economic activity that requires you to have efficiencies in that. So the reasoning why it's an imperative, and we all know why investment in infrastructure is important, is because of the efficiencies that you gain. So productivity is enhanced, and that physical capital translates into a higher level of what we call marginal product of capital. Anyway, before I get into an economics lecture, I think the state of infrastructure, let's look at social infrastructure. On the social infrastructure side, if we look at, for example, topical one is on healthcare, right? There has been an outright agreement that there are dual healthcare systems in South Africa. The existing healthcare infrastructure primarily has two type of, I'd say, populations it serves. The middle class, the higher population, versus, when I say higher, I mean higher level of income, and the income deciles that are lower than the middle class, which is the bulk and the majority of the population. So more than 82% of the population in this country rely on public health care, and that is wherein the problem lies. So the efficiencies that need to be gained in infrastructure lie there. So there has been a lot of research around the dire need for improving existing health infrastructure and development. And right now, estimates are around that you need almost $200 billion in investment. You need, and annually, there's allocations from the Department of Public Works and also Department of Health into some of these spheres in terms of health facilities and so forth. That deals with clinics, you know, hospitals, all the inputs that go into the infrastructure. But the reality in terms of what the status is that we are not able to currently meet the needs of those 82%, particularly in the public sector, because of the, I'd say, the backward or the inability for the health department at a national provincial level to meet the required needs at the provincial levels. So we've got various facilities that analysis has been done on. I'm not going to go into the detail of all the facilities, but I think that what is clear is that the infrastructure currently is in poor conditions. Various locations are underserviced. Primary healthcare facilities have shortages, whether of inputs such as beds and so forth, but also the number of facilities per patient and the servicing is highly concentrated in your public space versus your private space. So the cost that has been estimated and quantified for that, in that the infrastructure investment needed for maintenance and investment for healthcare alone is $200 billion. It could be more, depending on the numbers that have been updated. But where that money will come from then is a question of the budget and the kind of a response, the NHI being the response that government has taken. But the infrastructure requirements are then outlined as to where they will go into the different tiers of facilities, and how they will ensure that you improve the outcomes of healthcare on the social side. So we can go into education the same way, but I want to go into the economic infrastructure. But it sounds like you have a question for me.
Yes, I want to dig into that. I want to now look at the impact that infrastructure would then have from a development point of view. And I suppose that's where we go into the economic side of it, is to say there's certain infrastructure, as you alluded to, the social infrastructure that is there, but not necessarily for economic purposes, but is essential nonetheless. But there is also from an economic growth perspective and the state of the economy as a whole needs a different kind of infrastructure. And perhaps let's look into that.
Okay, so if I look at the different kinds of infrastructure that you need in the economy, so the one that everyone knows about is roads. Everyone travels on roads. Every day we're on roads. South Africa has almost 750,000 kilometers of roads, and the highest in Africa. Some of that is managed by our entities, such as the National Roads Agency, SANRAL, and they manage a portion of those roads, and they have a value of the roads that they manage. And the value is quite high. The carrying value of roads managed by them is around 420 billion. So the infrastructure valuation is quite valuable. Where we then go into the status of roads, a lot of the road network, we know that 80% of the road network has to be rehabilitated, or rather, I'd say maintained. There's a maintenance backlog on this road network that is worth so high. The other aspect is that the under-concentrated, or the regions where you saw very low levels of economic development, the rural communities have a higher proportion of, you know, gravel roads. So the servicing needed, whether it's for paving and or upgrading some of these roads in the local municipalities where there's very high levels of underdevelopment, is extraordinarily high. And so you've got to try to eradicate, number one, the backlog. But the second aspect is you've got to maintain the existing infrastructure and the road network. I think the other aspect that's important on the road is that the reason why roads have become more important is because of the failure of the rail system. And so a lot of freight is being moved on roads. And what we're seeing now with the data is that 80% of our freight load is actually should be on railways, and it should not be on the roads. But the maintenance now that is required, it causes a vicious cycle of more money being pumped into maintenance because of the wear and tear that comes onto the roads as a result of freight load that should be on the rail. And if you look at the rail system, we see in South Africa right now massive inefficiency. There's underperformance estimated around costing us around 46 billion at around 5.3% of our GDP. So our GDP is constrained. Why? Because the logistics systems we currently have, which incorporate the road infrastructure, are not adequate. They're not necessarily meeting, I would say, the requirements in terms of the efficiencies. And so there's a lot of reports that have looked at particularly the efficiencies of your Transnet, which has been obviously the mandated authority to deal with your rail infrastructure, both passenger rail and logistics rail. But we won't discuss PRASA today. We'll be discussing more Transnet. But I think the efficiencies there have been found wanting. And there's been a lot of recommendations on what to do around that. But the long and short is that it is not operating optimally. And current authority, rather, has to improve efficiencies on all metrics, whether it's the number of tracks that are moving, whether it's the protection of those assets. If you look at also the National Ports Authority that Transnet manages, there is a problem there in terms of the number of efficiencies when you measure what they call TEUs, in terms of how quickly you move cargo in and out, if I can just simplify. So we've seen a reduction of cargo that is moving in and out, and the efficiencies are decreasing. And there's a lot of numbers around this. I don't want to bore you with the numbers. But I think overall, the ports of Richards Bay, the Durban port, is not necessarily not just expanding sufficiently, but I think the handling facility and the rate at which you transfer goods and you move them in and out of South Africa into even the landlocked countries, it is a problem at our terminals. And so the efficiencies need to be improved, so that you are able to gain the productivity efficiencies, but also for commerce and trade. If we are an exporter, as we are going to suffer the, you know, the effect of the inadequacies. So I'll stop there. So on the port side, on the rail side, on the road side, on the social infrastructure side, even we could talk a little bit about water if there's time. But I think that we are not doing as well as we need to.
If you're just tuning in, I'm in conversation with Dr. Ntabi Singh Moleko. She is a senior lecturer at Stellenbosch Business School, but she's also a developmental economist. And we're taking a look at the current state of South African infrastructure on this election day and what it means for the state of the South African economy. Dr. Moleko, you touched on a couple of things around the strain that's being put in on both sides, whether it's private and public, due to inefficiencies that exist within the market. And I wonder if we could expand on that a little and just look at what that means from an impact perspective on the state of economic growth. Because as a developmental economist, you can shed some light on the role that something like infrastructure plays if we are to see an economy that is to not only survive and thrive, but actually expand and not sit sort of stagnant where we've been sitting for the last couple of years.
Yeah, so the impact on growth is very severe. Productivity is constrained. Your marginal productivity of capital isn't enhanced and optimized. And so the direct effect is that from the perspective of growth, you are depleting all your growth drivers. So it's an enabler. So if you look at the four components of growth, and I'll focus on maybe exports, we consumers, we want investment to come into the economy, whether it's our own investment, public investment through gross fixed capital formation or the private sector or FDI, but we want to see that come in. Usually that is attracted in, particularly external investment, because of the environment. Infrastructure is seen as an enabler in that. So if your infrastructure is not necessarily up to par, companies will look at investing elsewhere in Africa. There's Ethiopia, there are East African economies that are doing better than South Africa in certain aspects of efficiencies. So what will happen is that investment that should have come into South Africa in terms of a sector, companies will do their own due diligence and see that the efficiencies at our ports, maybe in Richards Bay or in Kucha or in Durban Harbour, is not adequate. So they will look, therefore, for another outlet, whether it's in Angola, they will look at West Africa or East Africa to see, are there more efficient ports so that we can move our products? Maybe it's cheaper for them. That means that setting up that infrastructure investment in terms of a sector will then move away. So we're losing investment. I think the other aspect is on the trade side, exports are a key fundamental portion of our economy. If you look at the South African perspective, we've seen exports comprising of about between 29 to 33% of our total GDP contribution, mainly to China and the US and Germany and India over the last few years. Some African countries within SADC we also export to. But the main issue here is that if we are exporting and the portion of our GDP that is reliant on exports is so significant, right? So we've exported about 13 billion of platinum to 19 billion the last 2 to 3 years. So between the 2 years, you can imagine if your efficiencies in terms of exporting and your rail network doesn't enable you to move those goods to the ports at the rate you want to move, and the cost of doing that is higher because now you're using freight on road, and also the delays that are experienced, you can imagine the value that we are losing in terms of just GDP. The same can be said of the cars. If you think about cars or delivery trucks, South Africa, primarily its industrial policy has emphasized the auto industry, and we are exporters of those primarily. And so we make for the European market and other markets. And so if we are delaying the exports because of the inefficiencies of our road or our port infrastructure, we actually depleting our generation of revenue as a country, and those entities are also depleted. So whether it's delivery trucks or cars, or whether you look at the core metals, I know that we export coal and also gold, we will suffer in that we will not generate as much revenue. So there are several estimates around, you know, how much revenue we've lost in terms of from exports, but it's usually around 4 to 6% estimate as a proportion of GDP. And the value, you can argue and debate if that is adequate. But let's go for the conservative estimate of around 4% of GDP. If you're losing that much because of the lack of productivity, what that simply means is that not only are those sectors losing revenue, but the tax revenue authority is losing in terms of what it could claim and use for development and the social programs and the redistributive function for using that money to sow back into the economy. So it is very expensive. So we've got to try to relook how we reconfigure and re-energize these entities that are primarily intended to drive productivity. In most countries, the coordination and the efficiencies, there's a lot of state-owned entities that actually manage many of these public investments, and it is usually the norm. So there's nothing wrong with having public entities driving development because of the public good and the public nature of those goods. I think what we have to try to figure out as a country is, because of the inefficiencies, what is the appropriate solution? What is the appropriate mechanism? I think as a developmental mindset, mine is to say, how can we improve efficiencies in our SOEs and ensure that the capacity, the capabilities, and the excellence of our SOEs is maintained or enhanced so that the running of those entities continues to the betterment of our goals? I think the second aspect that I have a challenge with, infrastructure is always viewed from the perspective of exporting our minerals. So the problem I have with that, we need to start rethinking our view of infrastructure, particularly economic infrastructure. And I mentioned ports, particularly ports and rail. We cannot, as Africans, particularly as a developer of infrastructure, think only about infrastructure from the perspective of exporting our unprocessed mineral wealth out of the country as quickly as possible. I have a problem with that. There's nothing wrong with exporting goods. I don't have an issue with that. We've always had, in fact, our economy has been built historically on the back of exporting many of these mineral goods. But I think that South Africa has to think now what infrastructure is needed for the beneficiation process of manganese, what is needed for the beneficiation process of iron ore, what is needed for the beneficiation process of platinum, right? What are the value chain derivatives? And therefore, what infrastructure is required in the context of developing and further enhancing, you know, the capabilities that will come from these products? And I think that that's where I think the industrial policy and also the economic strategy of the country needs to collapse and also speak to the coherence of the infrastructure plans that the country sets out. So I think that it's one view to look at the current state, current infrastructure, and a lot of the time we look at the inefficiencies because now mining companies cannot export and they can't make the billions and the windfall gains that they usually make, particularly with commodity pricing, commodity prices rising, and so they lose out. And that is a loss for the country as a whole, because not only are the gains not made by them, but also the Revenue Authority and those who are beneficiaries. But I think the main issue that we need to relook is what type of infrastructure and what type of coherent infrastructure framework do we need to ensure that we begin to reconfigure the strategy of the components of our GDP? How do we increase our manufacturing and our manufacturing capabilities with what infrastructure? How do we put the infrastructure? Where do we put that infrastructure? And the infrastructure that is needed, even for underdeveloped regions, which is normally not the focus, because we speak about, you know, ports, we speak about big rail and all of that, but the underdeveloped provinces that have had nothing, and you'll find that they'll remain economic wastelands on the peripheries if we don't reconfigure how to rethink economic activity being revived with infrastructure, because it has to be coherent. It cannot be of its own.
One of the questions I was going to ask you, Dr. Moloko, is exactly that question around what is needed. And I wanted to look at it from the perspective of saying that the public sector has, by and large, proven that they cannot concentrate on everything at once. And I wanted to get your thoughts as a developmental economist going into this new seventh administration, whoever the seventh administration may be led by. What do we say to them from a development point of view around things like public-private partnerships? Because we've proven that those can work if they are modeled correctly and implemented correctly. Where should we be focusing? Where does the private sector focus? Where does the public sector focus? And how do we meet each other in the middle so that we don't have these economic wastelands and so that beneficiation happens?
So with public-private partnerships, it's all about the valuing. It's all about the expertise in putting the structure together. It's all about having the appropriate tool and mechanism to de-risk projects. And so that's project prep. So the biggest thing that we have seen in the infrastructure space is that the projects that there is currently a process now where Treasury is openly called for comments on the review of the PPP framework, the public-private policy framework, because of inputs from stakeholders on areas that they need to improve around that. That's one. So I think that the National Treasury is in a process of trying to improve the amendments to your PPP framework. And so I know stakeholders have made inputs into that. I'm not involved in that process. But one of the things that needs to be done is to make things easier for the private sector to invest into a specific type of infrastructure. With the current regulatory framework, there are some limitations. So you want to make things easier for private sector investment. You also want to make things easier for the state to look for private sector investment, right? So what you do there is you've got to have a special purpose vehicle of some sort that actually enables this to be done. So now in the country, we do have an infrastructure fund. That infrastructure fund actually takes projects from different sponsors, helps to package and de-risk them for the private sector. It puts them into cash flows, ring fences them, makes recommendations on the appropriate vehicle, i.e. structure, governance structure, framework, and also on the pricing and any other issues on different sectors. And then they're able to look for the funding. The private sector comes in only after the National Treasury has committed to what they call the BFI window, a specific allocation. So I think that there is a lot of work that is being done in the background. I think that what needs to happen now is if the new administration comes in, they need to look at the recommendations that have come from the private sector, particularly in the process that Treasury has put in place and gazetted to amend the PPP framework. They need to then implement those recommendations that have been gazetted, right, and put them to use. I think the second aspect is to constantly support the work of the infrastructure fund that is helping government package these projects across the sectors, water, road, you know, social housing, etc., so that government doesn't have to raise the finance. So what you haven't mentioned today, government has key constraints in terms of the revenue. And why you want to start to ensure that you have other parties coming on board is because the funding constraint and the infrastructure finance gap can be alleviated if you look at alternatives. And that's the private sector, that's looking at capital markets, that's looking at pension funds, but they have to be de-risked and appropriately structured so that these parties can then come on board. As an aside, many countries actually don't only finance infrastructure investment through the state. Various countries have used different tools and mechanisms, and one of those being infrastructure finance through pension assets and capital market allocation through the capital markets, so that the state isn't only reliant on the budget that it collects, because it's not only very expensive if you're using it on the back of collecting loan finance from your Bretton Woods institution, which South Africa has done, but also it becomes imperative that you begin to look at very innovative ways and models to do that, so that you're able to meet the demand, because we have a massive demand. And so we're not currently able, even with projected infrastructure investment in the different social and economic sectors, we still will have backlogs. We will still have to deal with the underdevelopment woes that haven't been responded to pre-apartheid, post the democracy, 30-year democracy, and some of the needs that we're seeing that are still prevalent in the sector. So I think innovation is necessary. Will is necessary. Regulatory frameworks that need to be amended is necessary. But I think Regulation 28 was changed by National Treasury to allow for alternative asset class investment into alternative allocation, but particularly infrastructure has now been added. So it enables alternative sources of funds and funding to come into the fore from the private sector, because this vehicle has now been regulated and approved. So I think there is a lot of work done, but I think the momentum is not there. I think that private sector may have a caution, you know, precautionary sense. I think they need to come on board and be encouraged to invest into some of these vehicles that have been set up. But I also think that trustees of pension funds and pension fund investment strategies need to be concerned about these because they also bring returns. So they're not just vehicles you invest in and you hope for the best. You de-risk them, you ensure that there's cash flows, you put in place all the security measures and provisions that are required so that you protect the pensioners' funds and their money. So I think these things should be done, but they're not as popular in South Africa, which is surprising because of our development needs and challenges.
Well, the 7th administration certainly has its work cut out for it. We'll have the results of those elections in the coming days. But for now, we at least know the direction that our infrastructure development needs to take in order for us to start seeing any form of significant economic growth. We'll leave it at that. Dr. Moleko, thanks so much for those insights. Dr. Ntabiseng Moleko, who is a senior lecturer at Stellenbosch Business School, and she's also a developmental economist, joining me to reflect on the state of SA's infrastructure and what is needed for growth.